from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Okay, it's your turn. We have argued, we've worried, we've struggled through this long campaign season, and now the day before Election Day, as we complete the essential act of citizenship, we want your reflection. Your thoughts on the moment we're at, the choice the country is facing, it's big. This hour On Point, we open the phones to you. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is the choice you are making or have already made? Are you at peace with it? Are you and your neighbors okay with each other? Where does this go? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We really want this to be your hour. We want to know, we want to hear exactly what is on your mind on this election eve. We have two guests with us today to ride along with you as we take stock this day before we pick a new president. Joining me from New York is Catherine Jean Lopez, editor-at-large of the National Review Online, senior fellow at the National Review Institute. She's a columnist for the National Catholic Register. You can find her recent columns at our website, onpointradio.org. Catherine Jean Lopez, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
And from Detroit, Stephen Henderson joins us. He's host of the WDET show Detroit Today and editor of the Detroit Free Press editorial page. You can read his most recent column at our website, onpointradio.org. I should add the Detroit Free Press has endorsed Hillary Clinton for the presidency. Stephen, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Nice to be here, and thanks very much for having me, Tom.
Well, it's great to have you. We've had so many conversations in this long, long, long election season. Tomorrow's the vote. I can hardly believe it, but it is right in front of us right now. Let's just get the voices of these candidates in our ears for a moment before we dive in with our callers from across the country. And callers, this hour is for you. We're at 800-423-8255. How do you see what has unfolded, what may unfold tomorrow? Go back to the convention, Democrats' convention. Here was Hillary Clinton. A note of optimism and hope here. Became the first woman at that convention to become a major party's presidential nominee. Here she was during her acceptance speech talking about that milestone.
I'm happy for grandmothers and little girls and everyone in between. I'm happy for boys and men because when any barrier falls in America, it clears the way for everyone. After all, when there are no ceilings, the sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit. That's Hillary's message at the Democratic Convention, Donald Trump. And here's something a little different, not about barriers falling, but about Americanism against globalism. Here he was at the Republican Convention back in July.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo as long as we are led by politicians who will not put America first, then we can be assured that other nations will not treat America with respect, the respect that we deserve.
Donald Trump in Cleveland. Of course, it has been fraught. A little humor here as well, Catherine. Stephen, before we dive in with our listeners, here's Tom Hanks, Saturday Night Live, opening monologue, October 22nd. Tom Hanks personifying America's dad, comforting the country during a tense election season.
Hey, buddy. There's my big growing nation. How you doing, champ? So, rough year, huh? Yeah, I hear you. You got a lot going on inside you. You're feeling anxious and conflicted, and you're scared about what's going to happen next. Well, you are going to be fine.
Well, we hope so. 800-423-8255. Listeners, this is your hour. Catherine Jean Lopez with us from National Review Online. Steve Henderson from Detroit Today and the Detroit Free Press. Deb in Nashville, Tennessee is calling. Deb, you're on the air. How's it going?
Hi, Tom. It's going pretty good, I hope. We'll see Wednesday morning.
You hope. What are you hoping for? What's your hope? What's your fear today on the eve of the election, Deb?
I am scared that Donald Trump will be president. And I don't think I've ever been as scared in any one single election, and I've seen many. I'm 62. I just turned 62 last month. And there have been some scary elections, but none like this.
Why are you so scared about this one, Deb? I mean, lots of people have come to his rallies and are very enthusiastic for him.
I understand that, but I think he has gone to bring out the low common denominator in all of us, the fear. I don't think that's where we need to be voting from. I don't think that's where we need to be living from. I feel like he's run his campaign like a very bad reality show. And it's just, I just don't see how people can be that enthusiastic about the man. He's had his chances to make his mark a good mark on the world, and he hasn't done it.
What do you fear if he becomes president in that case? I mean, others are backing him. It sounds like you probably not. You don't like the tone of it. If what if he's president?
I think that we will, to be honest with you, I don't think anything will really get done. I think he stands a good chance of having impeachment hearings against him because he seems to think that you can run the country like a business. And I don't think you can exactly. There's that little thing called the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and I think he's just kind of trashing over them. And I don't think he's... I think the man's a demagogue.
Deb, I appreciate your call from Nashville, and we're going to have a lot of callers and calls in this hour. Catherine Jean Lopez, can I come first to you with that one? Deb looks out and sees a what feels to her like a reality TV show, and she's not persuaded that Donald Trump is committed to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. She sees a demagogue. Now, National Review, as conservative as can be, but has not been particularly friendly toward Donald Trump. You've said yourself you're not voting for either Trump or Clinton in this campaign, but what about Deb's concerns? At 62, seen a lot of elections, this one's got her... extra concerned, Catherine.
And I think her concern might be that it actually is a good reality TV show and people are entertained enough to elect him president. I have problems with Donald Trump. And I think going forward, though, obviously none of us know exactly what is going to happen on election night. But one thing that I think is really important is something that you hit on in your intro, which is, so what is this going to look like in the workplace, in the neighborhood, in among friendships?
Whatever the outcome you mean, on the other side of this.
Exactly, yep. Exactly. Because I think Deb totally hits on something. There's fear in the air. Where is that fear coming from, and why are people reacting? I do agree with her that I think Donald Trump does not call upon our better angels, needless to say. But why is it that your neighbor may be voting for Donald Trump despite everything they know about him? It is that protest vote. It is that frustration with politics, and there's something there. So we can't gloss over that aspect of it.
Stephen,
these are not just people who are racist who are voting for Donald Trump. There's a real, real frustration in the air.
Stephen Henderson in Detroit, you've been thinking about this, writing about this, about the fear piece in particular. And people, I mean, Trump supporters express fears about where the country is going. Trump opponents, sure. Clinton supporters express fears. You say we've got to be careful not to think about this fear in simplistic terms. All right. Take us deeper. What do you see here, Stephen?
Well, I mean, I think you do have a strain of fear in the country that's related to people's expectations, people's economic expectations, people's cultural expectations, and the fact that those expectations are being disappointed in ways that they haven't experienced before. You know, people feel like they can't get ahead the way that they believe they should be able to, or maybe the way their parents did. They believe the country doesn't look and feel the way that they maybe think it should, the way it has for a long time. And that is a real vulnerability that somebody like Donald Trump comes along and exploits with really simplistic answers, of course. I mean, he's got push-button answers for everything that are meant to tell those folks that feel this fear that everything can be okay instantly. Just elect me and I will fix all of those things. Of course, he also, you know, is ignoring these deeper issues that are at work here and not really addressing what's going on. And
is he ignoring them, Stephen, or is he bringing them to the fore? I mean, many have seen it as a kind of a appeal to white nostalgia for a time when they were overwhelmingly the majority and certainly the voting majority, and that was the dominant norm, period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no question that at least on the question of race, the question of otherness and dominance, cultural dominance in America, I mean, he's not being coy about that. I mean, he is surfacing all of these things that people – I think, have felt for a long time, have feared for a long time. And again, though, he has these push-button answers. Let's add a religious test to immigration, he says. Of course, that wouldn't last 15 minutes in most federal courts. Let's build a wall with our third largest trading partner and our geographic neighbor. Let's round up all the people who shouldn't be here and send them home. You know, all of these things are meant to sort of push button these feelings, and they are not practical or moral answers to them. And you know, I'm a big fan of letting history sort of inform the things that we're talking about and thinking about now. If you look back in history at parties who've indulged this kind of rank simplicity and amoral answer to deep moral questions, most of them haven't survived. I mean, the Whigs were, of course, undone by their inability to come to grips with slavery, this great moral question, this great economic question that faced the country in the 1850s. Because they shied from that depth, they shied from dealing with it in ways that addressed the moral aspect and the economic aspect. I think the Republicans, with Donald Trump as their leader, at least in this cycle, are in danger of the same kind of behavior.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On the eve of the election, at last, we are, this hour, opening the phone lines to you. Your last thoughts before the vote on the choice, on what the election's been about, this long campaign season, what it's shown us about our country, ourselves, and the candidates. Who's got your vote and why? Why does the country look so torn? Have elites lost track of regular people's problems? Have some people lost track of how we all have to pull together here? Catherine Jean Lopez is with us from National Review Online, writing along as we take your calls. Stephen Henderson is here. He's editor of the Detroit Free Press editorial page, hosts the Detroit Today Show on WDET there. Joe is calling from New York, Syracuse, New York. Joe, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
I'm calling about this election as something very special in dividing families according to their worldviews. And one thing I've noticed is that I've made comments to family members, and they see me as being very judgmental of them, and I had to retreat from my previously very strong stance against Trump, recognizing that they are yearning for something that I don't think ever really existed in the first place. I know that I, as a member of a family that has a lot of folks from small-town America, they see me as going on to a postgraduate degree in the East as being some sort of elitist, and that I'm somehow intellectually a snob because I take the view that Trump is a demagogue, where they take the view that he represents the common man, which I don't know how a billionaire does that, but that's the view, and that some of my views they take offense to as being painting them, even my family members, as hillbillies, which I certainly don't. But I've had a view that there's so many of the people that follow Trump strike me as representing the worst of America's past, not the best. So this yearning for some return to make America great again is a false narrative that he's managed to sell, just like he sold Trump University.
But they're feeling some loss. There's something they want. You say they're yearning for something that never was. How do you interpret your own family, what they're yearning for here, Joe?
I think they remember my grandfather going to work every day and being respected in his community and having a job that meant something, and now those jobs have disappeared, and they are resentful over it, and they want someone to blame. And so they blame who? The easiest target is the press, or the or you, or me, or anyone who isn't living their narrative. And this, quote, make America great again plays in so well to that. I mean, where we see these people who are so angry about the way the world has developed, and certainly it's developed in ways that has not been kind to many good people who were hardworking, showed up every day, did all the right things, paid taxes, and suddenly find themselves unemployed, deeply in debt and a house being foreclosed on.
And
I understand the frustration.
Yeah, and on the eve of the election, you find yourself retreating even from the conversation, and that's not good. That's within the family. Joe, I appreciate your call. Catherine, what about the yearning for something Joe says it never was, but also this sense that those who have done well in this country, of late they get labeled elites, have sort of drifted away from understanding what others are up against, and with that have left this kind of fire burning that's really flared up here.
I think the caller points to something that's so important. Obviously, this question of Americanism, as Donald Trump put it in his convention speech, which he played earlier, there are so many like hopes and dreams and aspirations that are fit into that nebulous phrase, Americanism or Make America Great Again. And so it brings attracts all types, right, with what they're hoping for. And I think at the heart of the problem here, and this is the thing that could unite us potentially, is I think we have a bipartisan problem where we're looking for the federal government, and forgive me if this sounds very conservative, but that's who I am. But we are looking for the federal government to do things that the federal government shouldn't be doing. You know, go back to the observations Tocqueville made about America. It's the civil society. It's the church, the temple, the mosque. It's the family. That's where we not need to begin the renewal work, rather than hope that, well, maybe the next strong man will come along, or maybe the next hopeful visionary will come along. No, there's a lot of hard work we need to do too. And I was struck by rereading recently the Second Vatican Council talked about politics, and it talked about it being a noble calling, which you kind of laugh out loud about right now. But I think the ways we can unite is in starting to look at politics, demand politics to be that again. Because even the people who think that Donald Trump will somehow miraculously make America great, whatever that means, they're looking for something from him that he's not necessarily providing, and they're also willing to overlook a whole lot.
Do you see a conservative in him, Catherine, a small government guy?
No. I do. He's obviously memorized some good talking points. But we, as you've noted, National Review has been pretty adamant since January. We put Never Trump on the cover. I think there's a problem in giving in and pretending he's a conservative. And you can still recognize the legitimate concerns people have. But this is a bigger, you know, I was really struck by Mike Pence keeps saying come home to Republicans. I don't think that's actually the selling point for conservatives who aren't willing to vote for him, because this doesn't feel like home. You know, you have to overlook a lot. And I think a lot of the people who are voting for him are overlooking a lot. And again, I think it points to the deeper problems we have here. And one of them is, you know, we think Barack Obama is supposed to solve all of our problems, or Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. No, this is a piece of it. And we need to demand better of politics, too. I don't blame either of these candidates for the fact that they're lousy candidates, frankly. I think it's the whole system.
Stephen, let me come to you with a call first from Charlotte, North Carolina. Very important state in voting tomorrow. Matthew, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What do you see, Matthew? Here we are. Election Eve.
Yeah. So, trying to, I guess, frame my comments in the discussion that's going on now, but I may go off on a tangent. So if I do, sorry about that. But
who are you voting for, Matthew? Who are you voting for?
I wanted to say that I support Trump, even if, you know, my support is tepid.
Okay.
Just because, in face of this Never Trump movement, I kind of see it on the opposite end of the spectrum. In the face of all that's been revealed about the DNC and the Clinton campaign and Clinton's particularly, it's almost as if, from my point of view, it doesn't matter who is running against Clinton. It might be a waste of time to try to go into detail with the weekly leaks and what's been revealed about them, but when you actually get down into the dirt and see what all is there, it's almost like it doesn't matter who is against her. This behavior in politics cannot be allowed to continue. And it's just unfortunate that Trump is going up against her.
And the Trump dirt, what about the Trump side of the dirt ledger, Matthew? Does it bother you or not?
Not in the least. I mean, the things that's been, I don't know, quote-unquote revealed about Trump, how many years ago did it occur?
No, but I mean business practices, multiple bankruptcies, big bankruptcies, you know, the way he's used the court, the way he's gone after the diversity of this country. And, yes, of course, sure, grabbing women by the whatever. None of that looks like serious dirt to you?
Okay, well, this is just, these types of things are going to be brought up against anyone who goes up against a powerful campaign. And even, let's just say, okay, I mean, they're more like allegations, and you have to dig a bit to find the news stories that say they've been basically made up. I can't say.
Well, no, I mean, the bankruptcies are real. His comments are on the record. They're not made up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, but you know, you can look at the bankruptcies, or you can look at his comeback after them, and you know whether or not he can turn a whole country around, just like he did.
Yeah.
A company is a completely different story, but there is a little bit of faith that his supporters have in him about that.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. And you're ready to go, tepid but Trump in Charlotte, North Carolina. Let me take it to Stephen Henderson. I appreciate your call as well, Matthew. Stephen, Catherine is looking for some moral rebirth here. Our caller in Charlotte doesn't see it in the Hillary camp and you know, tepidly goes to Donald Trump. Where do you go?
Yeah, I think, and not to disparage the caller, of course. I mean, it's important that he's listening and felt comfortable enough to call and say what he believes. At the same time, I would be remiss if I didn't point out the enormous amount of privilege that is reflected in his comments. If you think about what Donald Trump has said he wants to do to people in this country, what does he want to do to people who are Muslim, who believe differently than the Christian majority? He wants to add a religious test to immigration. He wants to maybe talk about making them register as Muslims somehow here in the United States. What does he want to do to Latinos? He wants to build a wall between our country and theirs, supposedly to keep illegal people out. But of course, the effect of that really is saying stay out to everybody. He wants to round up people who came here with the same aspirations as everybody else, but couldn't get a legal path into the country, maybe because of money, maybe because of opportunity, all kinds of things that keep people from doing that. How does he want to heal the nation's racial divides? He says during a debate, in answer to a question about the racial divide in the nation, well, I doubled down on stop and frisk. That's his answer. I mean, if you are a person in any of those categories, that's not even to get into the things he said about women.
And you're speaking here as an African American in Detroit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That the fear, some of the fear that people feel right now, if you are in one of those groups, is about the idea of being made into the other by policy, not just rhetoric. I mean, Republicans have a lot to account for here, too. They've indulged the rhetoric of that for some time in our politics, decades, in fact, and sort of subtly said it. Now you've got somebody who's saying, I'm going to make it into law. I'm going to make the government the arm of enforcing this vision of inequality that I have. And so I think no matter what you think about Hillary Clinton, no matter what the problems are, and is she flawed? My gosh, of course she is. But there is no comparison. And the idea that what she's doing is tantamount to this kind of embrace of otherness and division on Donald Trump's side is not just absurd. It is really it's fear-inspiring and offensive to people in those groups. The idea that our lives, our freedom, and our liberties are somehow expendable because Hillary Clinton used the wrong email server, it just does not calculate.
A view from Detroit right there from Stephen Henderson with the Detroit Free Press. Jim in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Jim, you're on the air. It's your hour. What do you think, Jim?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to express why I voted the way I did. I wanted to vote for somebody who'd build rather than destruct, who'd unify rather than tear apart. I was taught by my grandmother, she was from East Texas. She said, little pigs run through the same hole, and you can always tell a pig by its grunt. And you listen to the people who support Mr. Trump, despite the horrible things he said about a wide variety of human beings, and yet they support him anyway? It's a moral question to me. And beyond that, I look at it and I figure, you know, I was a Bernie supporter originally. I was really disappointed he didn't make it. I think that some strings were pulled that hurt his chances. But beyond that, nothing in politics is immediate. And when somebody tells you he is the only answer, that he's going to be God's greatest gift to the presidency, or you've got somebody who says, this is what I'm going to do and this is how I'm going to do it, especially that last part, this is how I'm going to do it, that matters. That matters a lot. And when you realize that we have a chance to go in a direction, or we can follow the Republican path of the last 8 years, which is to do either nothing or to constipate the system. I don't think that's the way I want to see our country go.
Jim, I got it. I'm going to keep rolling right here. I appreciate your call from Milwaukee, Windsor, Connecticut. Richard, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't know. I just feel like I need to state the fact that if any one of our servicemen or women did anything like Hillary Clinton did, they would be dishonorably discharged and barred from working for the government anymore.
What are you talking about exactly, Richard?
Her email scandal. And she shouldn't be handling her emails on her own private servers, period. Period.
Well, you know, Colin Powell did, military guy, and James Comey, the FBI director, says nothing to prosecute here, though. He was pretty critical of her, like you, but nothing to prosecute here. So what do we do?
Well, I don't know what to say. Maybe he's scared or something? That's about the only thing I can come up with. But
no, he says there has to be proof of intentional transmission and willful mishandling, and he said they did not find it in their considerable investigation. So what do you do?
Well, they need to do what they're supposed to do. There's lack of candor. Any politician or anybody in our government who even brings a negative outlook to their position is to be eliminated from that position and barred from ever working in the government again. These are part of the codes of government. So what's going on?
Richard, we've got it. Catherine, what about the email issue that just stays and stays and stays? Clinton has apologized for it, said it was wrong. Comey's come out now twice and said nothing to prosecute here. And yet, you still got people in this country, and Donald Trump puts it right out there. He still says, you know, she'll face criminal prosecution, and his crowds chant, lock her up. What do you think of all that?
Well, you definitely heard in two of the three last callers this frustration that the Clintons could get away with anything and the media will help her. Now, I don't think the media necessarily has a particular love for Hillary Clinton, broadly speaking. But it goes back to the problem of which one of your callers hit on recently. Any other Republican probably would have a shot here in an easier way than Donald Trump has. But what was striking to me about the two pro-Trump callers, especially the tepid one earlier, is I didn't particularly hear a love for Donald Trump. But this is very much a lot of the Trump voters that I run into. I spent a week in Florida a week ago, and all these good little old ladies coming up to me saying, I have to vote for Trump, don't I? I have to say, I have the luxury of living in New York, so my decision is a little bit easier. But there are people who do feel that there's an existential threat to their values. And Clinton represents that. And that's why they're voting for Trump, despite not liking him.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're opening the phone lines to you, listeners, this hour. Tomorrow, Election Day. Many have already voted. Many, many more will vote tomorrow. And we want to hear what's on your mind as we face what many see as a huge, if we may use that word, day of American voting, American decision. Well, how do you see the stakes here in 2016, November 8th, tomorrow, in this election? And what do you want to say to your fellow Americans on the eve of voting day? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK with Stephen Henderson from the Detroit Free Press, editor of the editorial page there. He's also on WDET in Detroit. His show is Detroit Today. Catherine Jean Lopez is with us from the National Review Online, joins us from New York. You can join us as well. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, of course, out and campaigning all weekend long. Here was Trump in Sioux City, Iowa yesterday, saying Tuesday's vote will bring change.
I'm asking you to dream big, because with your vote, can you believe this? In just 2 days, we're 2 days away, we will get the change you've been waiting for your entire life.
And Hillary Clinton yesterday in Philadelphia, she asked voters to choose hope over fear.
I know there's a lot of frustration and even anger in this election season. I see it. I hear it. Sometimes, you know, I'm the subject of it. I get it. But anger is not a plan. Anger is not going to get us new jobs with rising incomes that will create a strong, thriving middle class.
Stephen Henderson, how do you see the stakes tomorrow? We've got listeners writing into us. Ronan in New York writes, what's at stake? Simple, a choice between democracy and fascism. What do you see at stake tomorrow, Stephen?
Yeah, you know, yeah, I think there are certain presidential elections in history that have been about something more than just the two candidates or the two parties or even the issues that are on the table. And I think this is another one of those elections. We are voting for the whole idea of what America and Americanism is going to look like. I mean, the two visions laid out here by the candidates are so starkly different. One drawn almost entirely on this idea of us fearing one another expressing dominance over an imagined dominance over the rest of the world. The other trying to get at what might bring us back together. I mean, I think one of the things about Hillary Clinton is the recognition on her part that things are not entirely copacetic between Americans, and that there are ways that we need to sort of get through that to the other side. We are choosing who we will be on November 9th, not just who will lead us. And 40, 50 years from now, I think historians will look back on this moment as one of those, like 1860, for instance, or 1932 or 1960, 1980. There are certain points where we go one way or we go another, and this is one of them.
Catherine, do you see the democracy on the line here?
As I said before, I think Donald Trump does not, needless to say, does not bring out the best in Americans. One thing that I found particularly perplexing—
Hey, don't be too subtle, Catherine. You know, doesn't bring out the best is not really an answer to the question.
Well, to answer your question, Hillary Clinton, I don't think, is the uniter that some suggest she is. I would push back just a little bit, Stephen, because I have to say, in all honesty, I was looking for excuses to consider voting for Hillary Clinton. And if I, who work at National Review, am looking for excuses, I can't be the only one looking for a little bit of an olive branch. And I have to say, you know, the issue of abortion is one where good politics would have suggested she give a little, she soften a little. But in the last debate, she doubled down on it's not her fault that those were the questions about the Supreme Court, the first two questions. But she doubled down in a way that I don't think was smart politically. And I think there was a lost opportunity.
She doubled
there.
Down on the law the way it is.
On supporting Roe v. Wade.
She doubled up. I mean, she's obviously an advocate for legal abortion. There's no question about that. And Tim Kaine
the majority of the country sits in that camp.
Well, if you look at a lot of their Marist poll numbers, Pew numbers over the past decade, there are a lot of pro-choice Americans who do not support abortion all three trimesters, who would look for some healthy restrictions. Hillary Clinton's against those.
But you wouldn't vote for her then. So does that mean that you would put that issue ahead of the democracy, if those are the stakes? I don't know if you'd even frame it that way.
Well,
would
no,
you?
I I don't think the end of democracy is necessarily going to come in the next four years. And I say that as someone who's not voting for Donald Trump. And I do think he brings out the worst in us in many ways. But we still have a fight on our hands even after Election Day. And I wouldn't give up democracy if Donald Trump is elected and becomes president on January 20th. We all have a lot of work to do to unify here. And I think my greater point here is that can we stop looking for the president to have some magic button that's going to fix everything? The morning after is a time for a lot of humility on everybody's part. I think that might be the better way to approach the morning after, whenever the morning after might be. Right?
Right. Who knows what it's going to be? President obviously doesn't fix everything. But a president's the leader of the country by definition. It's right there in the Constitution.
And absolutely. And if you go around the world, people want to know what on earth we're doing to ourselves and the rest of the world. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I spent 3 weeks in Poland this summer, and that was the question everyone had. What are you people doing? Not liking either of the candidates, not thinking either of the candidates is the best of America and what we need. And we're dealing with some obviously serious issues around the world, issue of genocide of Christians in the Middle East, for one thing that you don't hear a lot of seriousness about on the campaign trail from either candidate. So again, I think this is a matter of we need to all eat a little humble pie here, you know, the morning after, because neither one of these candidates, as Stephen agrees as well, is a perfect or good candidate.
Well, there's no such thing as a perfect candidate. I mean, you're always
choosing. Well, I'm not sure we have good candidates.
I think Hillary Clinton, in terms of her qualifications, her experience is certainly on a very different level in terms of her fitness for the presidency than Donald Trump. You know, Republicans also now talk really differently about her than they did when, for instance, she was in the Senate and was really key to bridging the gap between Democrats and Republicans. She was one of the more reasonable partners they had in order to try to get stuff done. Now, of course, that she wants to be president, it's a different story, but I get that that's politics. I was also in Europe this summer and in Spain. And everybody who came up to me to talk about the election said two words, Donald Trump. No one asked me about Hillary Clinton. I mean, the level of shock that this was a candidate who had a shot at the presidency was the thing that I seemed to experience. Now, Southern Europe's a little different, I guess, than Central and Northern Europe. Mm. But
Fred writes to us online here, responding in part to you, Catherine, and maybe not, I don't know as well, but he says, we the people will need to come together to solve our problems. He also writes that we need to firmly reject nativism and bigotry. Sandy, not so optimistic about the future of things here, says, regardless of Tuesday outcome, U.S. politics is lost to all-out warfare for the next generation or more. Comedy, getting along. DOA, dead on arrival. Susan's calling from Neshota, Wisconsin. Susan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My major concern in this election is, first of all, having a candidate that can represent our country with dignity and class. And I see that in Hillary. I don't see that in Donald Trump. I'm a breast cancer survivor and have had to put up with unaffordable health care most of my adult life as I'm self-employed. Mm-hmm. And 8 years ago, when it was the perfect storm with our bubble in the real estate market as well as breast cancer, my husband and I fought to not go bankrupt just because that was a personal choice for our future business. Mm-hmm. Now I'm faced with, I have affordable health care. It's expensive. I don't like it. I felt all along that we missed the boat on single payer system. But I do believe that we might have another shot at it with Hillary.
What do you think about Donald Trump's bankruptcies, his company's bankruptcies four times, I guess? You with breast cancer struggled and didn't go there. He did multiple times. What do you think of that?
Right. Well, you know, and that's just the thing. I mean, my husband and I, part of our business was property rehabilitation. You need a line of credit. That line of credit was frozen in the middle of all this with a balance on it, a large balance on it. Mm-hmm. Then both of us were out of work for 2 years because there was no homes to sell. It was the perfect time to, and we could have declared bankruptcy, but the threat was that beyond the 5 years, we would be out of business. we would not be able to go back into that business and go back into the bank and open up a line of credit and say, hey, we need help. That was not...
He went a different way. What do you think of that?
I'm sorry?
He went a different way than you. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's like anything else. You need to offer a businessman a lifeline so that people do take risks.
Okay, but four times, you're okay, we got it. You're forgiving there.
I think he abused it. I think a lot of people abuse the loopholes.
Yeah.
And big power, big lawyered up money men can do that. And these laws that are designed for John Q. Public is being abused by people who have resources beyond our reach.
Susan, I appreciate your call from Wisconsin. Let me get one more right here from Vermont. John, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, what do you see?
I see two systems. One, I wanted to remind everybody that these two are the product of the primary system that we devised. So, frankly, we only have ourselves to blame.
The party's devised anyway. Yeah.
Well, yes, exactly. But I'm talking about the system of government. And I can't see Trump being a viable leader because he's treated the election process like a zero-sum game. He's called the system rigged when it goes against him. He praises those practitioners when he gets a decision that supports him. You can't have it both ways. I see that as irresponsible. We've got a system that's based on trust, communication, conversation, God forbid, compromise, and ultimately consensus.
Or do we really? When was the last time you saw that really working?
No, it's the system how it's designed. How we execute it is another thing entirely.
Yeah.
He's doing an end around on that. And how does he intend to govern when he dismisses whole segments of the population, and more important, those same legislators that represent those people? It's great if you can get in the office because you've gotten 50 plus one, in the Electoral College, but you have to work with those people afterwards. I don't see how he gets anything done because he's already called people names in public.
John, we've got it. I mean, Catherine, Stephen Murray writes to us along these lines, writes to us online. If Trump doesn't get what he wants tomorrow and refuses to accept a loss at the polls, is he threatening to rouse his followers to launch an armed revolt against America? Sounds like it. I mean, our caller is looking at the possibility of people working on answers to problems. Our writer here at the website is concerned about something deeper than that, about things really being taken off the rails. Stephen, do you have that concern?
I don't. I think that's only happened one time in our history that the election did not result in a sustained peaceful transition of power. 1860, of course, when Lincoln is elected and signs the Emancipation Proclamation, we descend into a civil war. But that was an extreme example over a very, very important issue. I don't think the country is quite in the same place. I think most people will accept the outcome of the election. I think my greater fear is that that we won't move past it politically in order to help whoever wins govern. I mean, if you look at some of the things that people who have power are saying, Republicans talking about blocking, for instance, Supreme Court justices further into the future after saying, well, we'll just wait for the next president to do it. I mean, I think – and that is just politics in some cases. It's posturing. It's meant to raise the Republican turnout, I know. But I think it's damaging to the stability that we count on in this country, the one thing that does separate us from many other nations around the planet, which is that we decide these things at the ballot box and we move on and we work together. I do worry that is going to be in some jeopardy.
Dallas in Hartfield, Virginia. Dallas, thank you for calling. You're on.
Well, thank you very much. I'd like to say I'm independent. I'm a social moderate, a fiscal conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, what have our career politicians done for us over the last 20, 30 years? They've given us open borders. They've given us $20 trillion deficit. And most important, what the first thing they do once they get elected is start running for re-election.
So you're saying let's have a non-politician, let's have Trump?
You're daggone right, I'm saying let's have a non-politician. Let's have somebody who's concerned about the country and not about their politician, their political jobs.
Dallas, we've got it. Let me squeeze one more in. It's a caller's hour. I appreciate your call, Dallas. Patricia, Baraboo, Wisconsin. Patricia, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say that I'm horrified by what's happening. I love this country. I love diversity. I love the planet. And it all feels like it's being threatened. And I don't understand why we can't all work together for a common good. And that is my worry about this election. I'm supporting Clinton because I think that there's been a lot of misinformation, and we don't even know the facts. But if you look at her record in terms of growing up, if you watch the PBS special that was on both candidates, you see that there was a love, and you can also see her struggle as being a woman in politics today.
And where's the horror come from, Patricia? You say you're horrified.
Well, it feels, you know, I watched Wisconsin be divided by Mr. Walker. And I saw the divide and conquer, and I saw people start to look at each other and feel that they're different, and that's what Trump is encouraging, and that to me is horrifying because I love diversity. I mean, we have so much. We're a rich nation. We're rich in many ways, and I would like to see us reach across borders instead of divide. It's not the way to go. I just know it in my heart of hearts.
Patricia, that's going to be the last word for us in this caller-driven hour, and we really appreciate
great
your call
word
as well. Patricia, thank you so much. Thanks to all of our callers all across the board this hour. Stephen Henderson in Detroit, thank you very much for being with us today, Stephen.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And Catherine Jean Lopez at National Review in New York. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Vote. Go and vote. This is On Point.